News Talk 580. KMJ Fresno.
The news starts now.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. 2 days before the primaries in North Carolina and Indiana, Barack Obama is still shadowed by the controversy over his former pastor, Jeremiah Wright. That shows in a CBS News New York Times poll just out. Kathleen Frankovic is our director of surveys.
47% of voters say that it was for political reasons that Obama decided to renounce his minister. 34% believe that the split came mainly because Obama disagreed with the things that Reverend Wright had said.
Here's what Obama said today on NBC's Meet the Press.
I don't want his words to somehow distract from what I think are the opportunities for us to move this country forward in ways that continue on the progress that we've made in the past.
I'm Tom Foti. Looking past the Tuesday primaries in Indiana and North Carolina, where Hillary Clinton expects to do well enough to keep going, she sees no November problems with dragging out the fight with Barack Obama.
There is no doubt in my mind that we're going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Senator McCain.
As for those disputed early primaries in Florida and Michigan, where she claims victory after promising not to campaign.
The rules, I said we shouldn't campaign, but there was nothing saying take your name off the ballot.
The Michigan and Florida results at the moment do not count, and Democrats are still trying to figure out what to do about it. Senator Clinton was on ABC's This Week. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
Clinton favors a summertime suspension of the federal gasoline tax. Obama says it wouldn't do any good. In the CBS News New York Times poll, 49% said lifting the tax is a bad idea. 45% approved. According to the Lundberg survey, the national average for regular is $3.62 a gallon now, up 15 cents in the past 2 weeks. Trilby Lundberg blames a variety of factors.
Some of it is the trickle-down pass-through from higher crude oil prices in this 2 weeks versus the prior 2 weeks. But the majority of that 15 cents went to some profit margin recovery for retailers and a little bit to hard-pressed refiners as well.
The cheapest gas she found was in Cheyenne, Wyoming, $3.39 a gallon. San Francisco is at the other end of the spectrum, $3.95. Graduation day in Greensburg, Kansas, but this high school commencement was different. The speaker was President Bush.
The Greensburg class of 2008 has learned that Americans will always rebuild stronger and better than before.
It's 1 year to the day since a tornado demolished much of Greensburg, killing 11 people.
The tornado tore apart the beams and boards that held your houses together, but it could not break the bonds of family and faith that hold your town together.
Mr. Bush handed each of the 18 graduates their diplomas. A powerful cyclone from the Bay of Bengal is blamed for more than 350 deaths in Myanmar, and on one island, authorities say 90,000 people are homeless. A huge wave jumped a seawall in Seoul, South Korea, sweeping 9 people to their deaths. This is CBS News.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from your dipstick.
You know what they say, if you want good advice, ask a dipstick.
That's what they say.
Yes.
I think I'd rather go to a Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer when I need an oil change or anything else.
Well, I guess you want a professional opinion, huh?
Well, the dealer knows my car. You know, I'd much rather talk to them than to a drumstick.
Dipstick.
Sorry.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service. Come in, keep going.
You look worried.
My doctor said I'm going to get serious about my blood pressure.
So did mine. He recommended Amil BP.
The naturally derived ingredient in Amil BP has been clinically shown to help maintain healthy blood pressure. Amil BP is safe and has no side effects.
I take Amil BP every day.
Oh, like vitamins.
Exactly.
Maintain healthy blood pressure with Amil BP. Available at CVS, Walgreens, and other retailers near you.
Okay, Fresno homeowners, you've got to hear this. The government just created an unheard-of opportunity for you to reset your mortgage and radically reduce your monthly payments. The Fed has finally gone to bat for the homeowner by aggressively boosting lending limits and slashing interest rates. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this historic moment offers you a brand new chance to lock in a 30-year mortgage as low as 5.5% with an APR of 5.6. The fact is, we're one of the only mortgage banks in the country that can truly deliver these rates. We'll back it up with our guarantee guarantee to beat any written rate and fee structure. Bottom line, if you're paying more than 5.5% on your mortgage, it's time to hit that reset button, and we'll quickly lock in your rate of a lifetime. So make one simple 5-minute call to 456-6000 right now, and I'll pay for your home to be appraised. Paramount Equity is committed to saving our neighbors money. Call 559-456-6000.
Licensed by the Department of Corporation.
If you were an infantryman in the Pacific in World War II, you probably didn't expect to make it home with your life, let alone a souvenir. If you did happen to bring back a 3-foot by 3-foot silken Japanese flag, what would you do with it? I'm Paul Leffler. Sunday on Hometown Heroes, we'll hear the account of one such flag and where it ended up more than 30 years after the war. It's a remarkable story, and I hope you'll catch it on Hometown Heroes, Sunday at 4 or as soon as baseball's over on News Talk 580 KMJ.
News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, coming to you each and every Sunday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com worldwide, available on the internet 24 hours a day. Don't forget, if you missed part of the program, to go back to KMJ580.com and click on podcasts, where you'll find each week's new original episode of Hometown Heroes, where each week we visit with Valley veterans of World War II. Today, a big treat to talk a little bit with Angelo Gonzalez, who has a very unique story. He was a Sanger Apache, grew up in Sanger, at least moved there as a teenager, and by the time his high school days were wrapping up, there was a war going on, right, Angelo? Let's talk about how you ended up in the service. Did you enjoy growing up in Sanger, and how old were you when Pearl Harbor happened?
Well, I was about 18 or 19 years old. That's about the time that they bombed Pearl Harbor. And at that time, we were living in Easton.
Mm-hmm.
And I was drafted. My number came up. And there I had to leave. And we left and got inducted in Fresno and continued on to basic training in Camp Roberts.
I bet you loved that 25-mile hike.
Right. It was quite a hike. And besides the other obstacles that we used to go through, like dragging yourself down on tummy with your rifle with you and going under obstacles, and it was quite an ordeal.
Did you think about enlisting before they drafted you and trying to get into another branch of service, or did the Army sound good to you the whole time?
No, the Army says you are appointed to the Army. That is it. You're not going anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So I met with a few buddies from around Fresno at the same time that I got drafted, and they got drafted, and we got together. And there's a few still. A few of them got killed, never made it back. But there's a few of us around Hanford, Selma, Fresno, Sanger. They're still with us.
Guys from your unit?
Yes.
That you've kept in touch with?
That we still keep in touch with.
That's wonderful.
So, therefore, we still got inducted and went into the service together.
Now, a lot of guys that fought in the Pacific had a variety of different roles, from being on the front lines to cleanup duty. Maybe they had flamethrowers, they had automatic weapons. You were a rifleman. Is that something that you wanted to do? Were you always a good shot?
Yeah. Yeah. Growing up in the farm, growing up, we had rifle practices. We had only a .22, but nevertheless, we always had rifle practice at the ranch, and it wasn't really my choice, but there's where I got assigned to.
They realized you had a pretty good eye.
Right. I got assigned to that, so therefore I stuck to that.
Now, you survived the 25-mile hike at Camp Roberts, and a lot of guys, I understand, thought if they could survive that, they could survive anything. But eventually, they shipped you where there was more than just a long hike or dragging yourself down a hill to deal with. When you were heading overseas, what was going through your mind? Did you think that you were going to come back, or is that something where you thought, you know what, everybody's number comes up eventually?
You know what? I was thinking, not really scared, not really concerned. I knew I was in the service. I knew I had to serve, and I had given up. I says, here I am. I got to go, and I'm going. So here we are. We went and got into the ship. Of course, the ship took 30 days to get there to the front lines where we were being assigned.
And I'm guessing you'd never been on a ship quite like that before.
No, I had never been in a ship that way. But anyway, it took us 30 days because we went zigzagging and a long way around because of the Japanese submarines.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty thick at the time. And so, like I say, it took us a while, and we landed in the Philippines and went there. We was there for a couple of months and the battles in Leyte. And after that, we got assigned to Okinawa, and where we landed at the Blue Beach.
Now, when you were at Leyte, that was the second battle there, I imagine. That's when MacArthur returned? Is that the situation we're talking about?
Right, right.
Is that something that meant something to you? Did you hear about MacArthur coming back? Was that a big deal to you at the time?
Well, yes and no, but nevertheless, we had to serve, and we were there, so...
You had your own skin to worry about.
I had to worry about my own skin, and so I had to just go ahead, bow my head down, and carry on.
Were you a little nervous before
yes,
you stepped ashore?
Yes, I was.
Describe that for me. What was that like, the first time that you got a taste of combat? Because all the veterans that I've talked to over the last few years, I mean, they all say the same thing, that as much as you prepare and as much as you try to simulate what it's going to be like, nothing quite prepares you for the real deal. Is that how you felt at the time?
Yeah, really. Really, that's you're never prepared for everything that comes up, because there's different situations that come up before that you have never experienced. But nevertheless, we had to go forward, and like I say, when the worst experiences were when here we hit the beaches and you see cannons coming out of the caves, they're shooting at us, and snipers, and your buddies are dying right next to you or ahead of you, and they're falling like trees. And here you are, right in the middle, hoping, say, God, please save me. And that's all I could say. And go ahead.
Let's talk a little bit, and obviously God was there protecting you. Thank goodness. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here talking to me today, and I'm glad that you are. Your duties at the time, and they were shooting at you. You had to do a little shooting at them, too. What was described to you? What kind of missions were you given? And was it a lot of detailed instruction, or did you have to pretty much improvise with whatever the situation was?
Most of it, you had to improvise yourself. Look out for yourself. And when the command was to go forward, we have to go forward. Bad situation or not so bad, but still you have to go forward. And... But you'd have to pin out for your own self. Look out for yourself. If you start seeing snipers, you shoot at them. You shoot. You hit them or don't hit them, you still shoot.
Shoot at anything that moves?
Shoot at anything that moved. In fact, the division that I was in, they called us the Dead Eyes. And it's the 96th Division.
Mm-hmm.
And we were called the Dead Eyes. Shoot anything in front of you, no matter what it is. So that's what we used to do.
And I imagine a lot of times you probably couldn't tell whether you hit anything or not.
No, mainly most of the battles were at nighttime. Daytime was okay, but nighttime it was really rough. That's when they made their moves.
Mm-hmm.
They made their moves at nighttime because They knew exactly where we were at. They had observation points where they were watching us. And at times I got pinned several times. I got pinned where they knew exactly where I was. I couldn't make a move. I had to spend all day pinned because they had me zeroed in. I would test it by raising my helmet a little bit, and zing, there's a bullet right above my helmet.
I can't imagine what that feels like.
Yeah.
You probably think every next minute is going to be the minute that they come right on top of you and get you.
Right, right.
And were you alone? Did you have somebody with you?
No, all by myself.
What were you thinking? I'm sure you couldn't sleep at all.
We were progressing ahead in the front lines, and you hardly sleep. You hardly sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Right to date, I don't know how we made it in food. Some days we wouldn't even eat because we didn't have the rations or the time to eat. And water situation was real skimpy. But anyway, we did survive. And at times we lost several boys, several men in the front lines. And that gave us more area to cover. Because if I had two guys on my side that were covering their area, and if they were gone, I had to complete that area to protect the other boys behind me.
Just makes the odds for you a little longer than they were before.
A little longer, yeah.
It's not like you could go to the bench and pull in a couple guys.
And then at nighttime, you'd get back in your foxhole all by yourself. And here you are by yourself in a little foxhole where you're supposed to have a buddy with you.
Before we get to our first commercial here, what kept you going in those moments? I mean, was there something that you said to yourself? Were you praying? Were you reading something? Were you writing? How did you pass that time and keep your mind focused on what you needed to do?
Mainly, I had to keep my mind focused on the enemy. Kept alert, looking around, make sure that they wouldn't be hitting you. And if you saw anything move right in front of you, shoot. And that likely kept us awake most of the time. We had to stay on our feet all the time.
Well, we're going to talk more about that and some of the really unbelievable experiences that Angelo Gonzalez had during his time in the service, and even long after the service, how one particular experience from his time in the war came full circle 30 years later. That and much more to come as Hometown Heroes continues here on News Talk 580 KMJ.
I died last week, shot 3 times in the back. I guess you could argue I had it coming, but my mama, nah, she didn't deserve none of this. I watched her that day, at my grave. I never meant to cause that kind of pain. Yeah, I was in a gang, bad gang. Thought I was untouchable. I was just playing the fool. But my mama and my little brother, they're the ones that gotta pay the price. They're the ones that gotta deal with it all. You think my gang kids? I'm gone now. Hell nah. They just gonna pull in the next stupid fool and wipe up the streets with his sorry self. Goodbye, Mama. I wish I could tell you I'm sorry.
If you see gang activity or know of gang members, call the police. Together, we can save our kids. Call toll-free 1-888-498-STOP, 1-888-498-STOP, or valleycrimestoppers.org.
I have cash lounge geophobia, or fear of money just sitting there. When Bank of the West offered Best of the West checking, I knew I'd be okay. With it, I earn interest, with no monthly service charge. That's great for my lunar monetary phobia, fear of monthly fees.
Open Best of the West checking with direct deposit today at Bank of the West. You'll earn 2.00 annual percentage yield guaranteed to October 31st, 2008 with no minimum balance required. Add a debit card and you'll also get a free Best of the West discovery guide from the creators of Sunset Magazine. Plus, you could win one of 5 fabulous getaways.
That'll help my not-at-lastia-phobia.
Huh?
Fear of traveling without a guidebook.
Bank of the West, member FDIC, limited time offer, conditions and restrictions apply. Sweepstakes ends on June 30th, 2008. No purchase or account necessary to enter. Sweepstakes not available in all states and some restrictions apply. See branch or visit bankofthewest.com/bestofthewest for official rules and details, including prize values and estimated odds of winning. Travel must be completed by May 31st, 2009. Void where prohibited.
I love roller coasters. I like to look. I like to see things upside down.
You've always wanted to know who's on Match.com, and we want you to know it's okay to look.
There's interesting people at amusement parks. I like the people watch and funnel cakes.
Her Match.com username is Milo's mom, and you can email her right now. Go ahead. We guarantee if you don't find someone special within 6 months, we'll give you 6 months free. Visit Match.com for details.
Here you go.
Hey, where's the fries?
We only serve burgers.
And my drink? But wait, don't tell me.
You know that place between one-stop service and endless hassle?
I'm definitely there.
It's the same with insurance. Not all companies can provide the coverage you need. State Farm can handle all your insurance needs. You can save almost $600 just by insuring your car and home together. Call, click, or visit and start saving today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Average savings reported in a national survey by new State Farm policyholders that switched and saved. Homeowners insurance may not be available in all areas.
United States Army will recognize that music performed there by the local Sounds of Freedom band from the Association of the U.S. Army. Whenever they're having another concert, I'll be sure to give you a heads up. We like to talk about the Sounds of Freedom band here on Hometown Heroes because it's a great group of local veterans of all ages who honor our country every time that they perform. One man who served our country in World War II and is our guest on this week's program is Angelo Gonzalez. We talked a little bit about him first getting overseas as a rifleman with the 96th Infantry Division, is that right? And he talked a little bit about the Battle of Leyte and some of his experiences there. He also ended up on Okinawa, where one of the more intriguing parts of his experiences will come into play. But before we get to that, oftentimes I talk to veterans, and they're hesitant to talk about some of the more intense moments that they experienced. I know it took you decades before you'd really talk about some of this stuff, but you had some experiences where the rifle wasn't quite enough for you. You actually had some hand-to-hand combat over there?
Yes, we did. We had hand-to-hand battle.
Tell me about that. How did that come about?
Well, when we reached the peak in Conoco Hill, and we had a hand-to-hand battle with the Japanese. They would shoot us their grenades. We would shoot their grenades back. Their grenades were so small and so clumsy that we used to pick them up and throw them back at them.
That's playing with fire.
Yeah, it was playing with fire, and a couple of boys lost their hands that way. But nevertheless, we kept throwing them back at them because it was at close quarters. Didn't have enough time to ignite. So I'd pick them up, throw them over fast as we could.
That's when it pays to have quick hands. You ever play baseball growing up?
Well, I did then. But nevertheless, it was quite an experience to play with grenades. And we used to shoot ours. In fact, we kind of ran out of grenades at one point, and we had to kind of survive theirs. But then we did all we could to get through, and somehow we got rid of them.
I imagine that when you look back at close calls, that's
right.
Got to be one that sticks out in your mind as I easily could have been killed several times.
Several times, right. Like I said, I still have my souvenir. They call it the souvenir. I have shrapnel in my bag.
Yeah, you're not talking about the Purple Heart that you got because of it, but the real souvenir is still in your back.
That's still in my back, and shrapnels.
How did that happen?
Well, it just, one of the grenades came rolling down, got tangled up in my backpack.
Ugh.
It got tangled up, and that's when it blew up. I didn't have enough time to shake it off, so it kind of blew right in under my backpack.
I imagine it blew up your backpack pretty good.
Right, it blew it up pretty good.
And for a second, you probably thought it blew you up too.
Yeah.
What was that like? What did that feel like, and when did you realize?
It felt like a whole bunch of hot metal hitting you. Hot metal.
Did you think it was going to kill you?
I thought so. I thought it was going to kill me. I thought, well, I'm a goner. But no, I survive it.
And especially when it hits you in the back like that, there's so many places where it can get through and get an organ. It can get your heart. It can get your lungs.
Yeah.
It can get just about anything.
Lucky it was in the back, not in the front.
That's true.
Yeah.
Somebody must have been looking out for you that day.
Right. Yeah.
Did that get you off the front lines for a while, or did you have to keep fighting?
No, not really. I was back to this. In fact, the same day I went back, they cleaned me up. I got a clean jacket, and they kept my backpack, and I continue on. I came right back to the front lines again.
So they pulled what they could find out, and the rest they left in?
They left in, yeah.
Has that ever bothered you?
No.
Just
no, in fact,
there.
I came to a doctor after I came to the States because it was bothering me because I could feel it.
Yeah.
You could feel it. And I went to the doctor and I told him. And he says, oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. It'll work itself out.
Until you're trying to fly somewhere and you go to the airport and the metal detector
right,
gets you.
Right, metal. I'm up.
Did that ever happen to you?
Yes, it does.
Do they believe you when you tell them?
Yeah. Yeah, they have to believe me.
That's when you pull out your Purple Heart. That's where a Purple Heart can get you something. Can get you through the metal detector at the airport. Well, and I make light of it now, and I certainly don't mean to make light of those experiences, because that's certainly a near-death experience and a very death-defying experience. So you get through those situations at the Philippines and the Battle of Leyte. When did you find out that you were going to Okinawa, and what did you expect at the time? Because almost every battle in the Pacific, it seems like, the expectation was, oh, this will take a few days. This won't be a big deal. And without fail, every battle took longer than they had expected it to.
Right.
What were your expectations going to Okinawa?
Well, we just happened to get our orders. They pulled us out. And he says, boys, we have an order to get you guys up here behind the blinds here and get you ready for Okinawa battle. So more or less, they kind of suggested if I was volunteer. Well, a bunch of boys got together and they said, yeah, we'll go. We'll go. Why not?
So you weren't listening when they said never volunteer for anything
That's
in the Army?
That's right. Never volunteer. But I sure did that time. Because I hated the jungle.
Mm.
I hate it. And Okinawa, mostly open, mountainy, big
right.
trees. And very, very green, very nice. But it wasn't jungles.
Let me ask you about your rifle. You had the M1.
Mm-hmm.
It's very popular during World
That's
War
a popular
II.
Popular one, right.
Did it always work for you?
Yes, it did.
Never once failed you?
Never failed.
But you had to keep it clean and...
Kept it clean. And hardly had time to do that. And not in the front lines.
I imagine not.
Front lines, no.
Did you have the same rifle through the whole time?
No, I changed a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a carbine, a little small rifle carbine.
Yep.
I had one of those for a while. In fact, because of my regular M1 got so bad with mud and dirt, and I had to exchange it for that little carbine and until I got my new rifle. I got me another rifle.
Did you find that there were enough supplies for you, that there was enough available? I guess, to some measure, the amount of casualties that you guys suffered provided more weapons available for you.
Right. Yeah, that sometimes would happen, yeah. There would be rifles, abundance of ammunition and rifles.
Even though a couple years earlier, the guys who were on that same terrain at the start of the war... were using World War I rifles and the rejected ones that were all in pieces.
Right.
The guys who got caught in Bataan. You're probably thankful that you weren't in that situation and you had a little better equipment to work with.
Right, no. And they kept us supplied pretty well. I'm really amazed the way they kept us supplied all the time, different equipment, the ammunition especially. We had to have it.
Here you are, a Central Valley boy, on the other side of the world, in the Philippines and then in Okinawa. Were you having any correspondence with the folks back home? Did you have any contact?
Not hardly. Not until the last year of my service that I was in the Philippines. Back to Manila. I went back to Manila. And I started corresponding with my family. But most of the time, for I would say a couple of years, I hardly ever heard from them.
What did it mean to you when you did get a letter from them?
Oh, it was a nice feeling to know how the family was and how they were doing and so forth.
In your mind, is that who you were fighting for? What in your mind were you fighting for?
Really, at that age, you don't even know if you're fighting for freedom or you're fighting for your life.
Survival.
Survival. And you're just going and being young, you don't think much of it. You don't think much of it. You just go. And that's what I did. I just went on and did my duty and kept going.
Well, I think I speak for myself and everyone listening when I say thank you for doing that, for keeping on going, and for serving our country the way that you did. And there's a lot more of your story that I think that our listeners will enjoy and appreciate today. When we come back, we're going to talk about a different kind of souvenir, not the shrapnel that he still carries in his back, but a souvenir that he brought home, had at home for 30 years before reuniting it with someone who it meant a little more to. That's a really intriguing part of this story, which I can't wait to share with you as Angelo fills us in on all the experiences in his long life. This is Hometown Heroes this Sunday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ.
What would it take for you to try a new diet supplement?
If it worked without making me jittery.
If it was truly different and not some gimmick.
I don't like feeling hungry and irritable. I really don't.
I don't want to look flabby or be tired.
Great news, America. We asked and you told us. And the result is Hydroxadrine, a brand new stimulant-free diet supplement that combines four, yes, four, powerful formulations to fight food cravings, burn fat, and enhance mood and energy. So not only will you look great, but you'll feel great. In fact, we're so confident that you'll lose the weight you want to lose without cravings and without feeling tired and depressed that we're making available an unprecedented risk-free 30-day trial. Finally, a diet supplement made especially for you.
Call 1-888-690-8257. That's 1-888-690-8257. Call now, 1-888-690-8257. Again, 1-888-690-8257.
I always wanted to be a fireman when I grew up.
A pilot.
A teacher.
For me, it was an engineer.
Over the years, my dream didn't change.
But the rising cost of college was a big reality check.
I was determined to make it on my own, to find a way that I could pay for college.
That's why I joined the National Guard.
The Guard gives me money for college.
So I can go to school full-time and fly part-time.
My unit helps out after a natural disaster hit.
Like after a tornado.
Flood.
Blizzard.
So I get to help people, just like I always wanted.
And around here, that's almost every June.
Monday through Friday, my job might be in finance. But when a wildfire breaks out, I get called up to help control it. There's no bigger rush than being a firefighter in the Guard.
Then flying a Black Hawk.
Then leading my squad.
Then rebuilding my hometown.
The National Guard put me in charge of my future.
Thanks to the Guard, I'm becoming who I always wanted to be.
You can reach your education and career goals faster in the National Guard. Visit 1-800-GO-GUARD.com or call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask us how much you'll receive towards your college expenses.
Sponsored by the California National Guard, aired by the California Broadcasters Association and this station.
Music to those who were alive about 60 plus years ago, particularly those who served in our armed forces during World War II, like the men and women who join us each and every week on this program, Hometown Heroes, on News Talk 580 KMJ and worldwide 24 hours a day, KMJ580.com. Don't forget, if there's a hometown hero in your life that you'd like to let us know about, email me, paul@KMJ580.com, and we'll talk more about that. Right now, we continue with Angelo Gonzalez, a World War II Army veteran, recipient of the Purple Heart. You heard him talk about the shrapnel that remains in his back from a Japanese grenade. There was another souvenir that he brought home from the war that ended up taking on more of an emotional value for him and for some people halfway across the world by the time that story was all wrapped up and had come full circle. Angelo, let's talk about how you came in possession of this souvenir. Before you even tell us what it was, describe the events that led up to this ending up in your possession.
Well, at the time that what happened is this soldier got in front of me, and it was either going to be him or me. And before he could point at me, I pointed at him first and got him. Well, made me feel bad, but nevertheless, that's what we were there for. Then I decided, well, see if he's got a name. So I went over and see if he had a name. I'd find nothing on him. I did find a little Buddha that he was hanging on his neck. But that's, and I brought it home with me, the little Buddha. And I reached for his helmet, pulled his helmet off, and inside the helmet was the flag. Well, this flag didn't mean much to me, but nevertheless, I don't know why, I saved it. I put it in my backpack and put it away. Wrapped a little Buddha and put it in the bottom of my bag. I said, well, I'll just, if it survives with me, fine. If it don't, that's fine.
And this was all on Okinawa?
And that was all in Okinawa, yes.
And when, not to linger too much on it, when you saw him, how close would you say he was to you? I mean, was he right on top of you?
He was right on top of me, yeah. Just right on top. He just raised up from behind a rock. There's a big, huge rock, and he just came around this rock. And I'm on this side of the rock. And when he popped out, I noticed he had his rifle, and he was getting ready to point at me when I caught him. So that's when I decided, well, I'll take the flag and as a souvenir.
And he had a diary on him as well?
The flag was signed, and it was a diary. Evidently, before he went into the service, he must have had a big party, and all his buddies, friends, mothers, signed it and put a little momentum on there, bless of luck, or God bless you, or whatever. And there was a little of everything, and it was pretty well full. It was pretty, he must have been a pretty popular kid.
This was a Japanese flag with the big red sun in the middle and the rest of it's white, but all of these autographs. And I'm looking at a picture of this flag here, and I mean, that he had it folded up inside his helmet, but when you unfold it, it looks like it's, what, about 3 feet by 3 feet
yeah,
square?
Yeah, 3 by 3, something like that, yeah.
And it was made out of silk.
It's all
Japanese
silk.
Japanese silk.
Yeah.
And so you took it home with you.
I brought it home with me, and 30 years later, I ran across this Japanese student that was studying communications here, and evidently he was sent from Japan to learn more English. He came over, and we took him in as a guest.
So he was a Japanese exchange student staying in your home.
Staying in my home, and came over, and my wife says, by the way, can you decipher this flag? My husband brought this flag, and we don't know what it means. Oh, what's it say? And it's got a lot of writing. So we brought it out. He looked it over, and he says, oh, my God, this means a lot to somebody because it's a lot of information here. He says, not war information, just personal information as to his buddies and friends' mother. So at the time he was going back to Japan, he asked me, he says, Angelo, why don't I take this flag back to Japan and I'll announce it on the radio and see if I can find her family, his family. I says, fine, take it with me. I have no use for it.
Because he had on there the name of the hometown, right?
Right. The hometown was printed on the flag. That's how he directed the communications towards that island, because they're different islands.
Right.
And evidently they were on the north part of the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow he was in Tokyo. And they found out about the flag, and they got together, and he presented the flag to the family.
But this was a real long shot. I mean, first of all, he has to run into you,
Right.
He comes to Fresno State. Is that where he was going to school?
I believe so, yes.
Well, he ended up in Fresno at some point, and he's staying in your house.
Right.
And he's in radio back home. He's
back
in the
home.
Communications business.
Communications, yeah.
So first of all, he shows up on your doorstep. There's one long, odd connection there.
Right.
Then he's in the right business back home. He goes back there, and he announces on the airwaves, I have this flag that's 30 years old, because we're talking 1976 now is when all this is happening, 30 years after the war, hoping to find this guy's family. And someone actually hears that broadcast and responds to him?
And responded to him and suggested it was one of his brothers that survived or whatever. I don't know if he was in the service or not. But he came forward and suggested and identified himself, that he was the brother and so forth, and he would like to have the flag. So, therefore, he personally took the flag to the family, and I can't remember the town, but he took the flag with the family. The brother went with him, and they presented it to the mother. The mother was overjoyed, very happy to receive the flag, and she says, thank you very much. And at the time they were there, he called my house from Japan, and unfortunately I did not receive the call because I wasn't home, and one of my daughters took the call and told her to thank us very much, that they were very grateful, very happy to have, it's like having their son back. And to them, it was sent back to them.
Well, and one thing I'm going to do here, you kept the flag for 30 years, so we know that you could keep a letter for 30 more years after you got this. And in 1976, after this all happened, that student sent you back a letter detailing that experience. When we come back from this commercial break, I'm going to read this letter for our listeners, if that's okay. And then I want to get from you what it meant to you when you realized what this meant to that family. So think about that as we take this final commercial break, then come back to wrap things up and hear the grand finale of Angelo Gonzalez's story here this week on Hometown Heroes. You're listening to News Talk 580 KMJ.
Wouldn't you love to be a lucky parent who's proud of your child's grades? Well, now you can turn poor grades around to A's, even when they're failing. Call right now for a free copy of the Top 10 Secrets to Improving Grades.
Hello, I'm Dan Bass-Majan. During my 20 years as an educator, the kids with failing grades were sent to me. I discovered that bad grades don't come from bad or lazy kids. They come from kids who are overwhelmed by everything they have to learn. That's why I created The Simple Way to an A. This system shows kids how to learn and how to ace every test. It's so easy. Your teenager will earn better grades in 30 days guaranteed and become the happy, confident kid you know they can be.
For a limited time, Dan is offering all parents a free copy of his Top 10 Secrets to Improving Grades. Call now so we can send them to you absolutely free. Call 888-698-6566. That's 888-698-6566. Call 888-698-6566. 888-698-6566.
Never thought much about what harm used motor oil can cause if it's not recycled properly? Well, consider these scary facts. 1 gallon of used oil can pollute 1 million gallons of drinking water. That's a one-year supply for 50 people. 90% of used oil filters are not recycled. If they were, recycling 1 ton of used oil filters would recover 1,700 pounds of steel and up to 60 gallons of used oil. The City of Fresno reminds you to be part of the solution. Recycle your used motor oil and filters properly. For more information, call 621-1111. This message funded by a grant from the California Integrated Waste Management Board. Zero waste. You make it happen.
Hi, this is Amelia Shepherd with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, inviting you to join the team. Team in Training provides 3 to 5 months of coaching and support to help you successfully complete a half marathon, marathon, or triathlon. Through fundraising, you will support our mission to cure leukemia, lymphoma, Hodgkin's disease, and myeloma, and improve the quality of life of patients and their families. Informational meetings will be held now through May 14th. Call to RSVP at 435-1482 or visit us online at teamintraining.org.
When the lights go on again, all over the world, and the boys are home again,
it's It's been more than 60 years since the boys all came home again, but only about 30 years since Angelo Gonzalez's story of service during World War II came full circle. That's because of what we talked a little bit about. You heard him describe the incident in Okinawa when he faced off with a Japanese infantryman. One of them was going to live and one of them was going to die, and Angelo fired first. Afterwards, he took from that Japanese soldier's body a small Japanese flag, about 3 feet by 3 feet, made out of silk. He talked about all the signatures all over it, the messages, the well wishes before that Japanese soldier had gone off to war. And also on that flag was the name of his hometown and the family name, Kawasaki. So years later, 30 years later, a Japanese exchange student was staying in Angelo's home. You heard him talk about how the Japanese student took an interest in that flag and offered to take it back to Japan to try to track down that family. So he had gone on the radio in Japan, tracked down the family, who was someone had heard that broadcast, and gotten in touch with him, and then he was able, 30 years after the war, to actually present that flag to the family whose son had been killed during World War II. There's a newspaper clipping that the Gonzalez's still have that shows that flag in the possession of the family members of this soldier, Kawasaki, and it was covered extensively by the Japanese media at the time. And here is the letter. I will read for you now before we get Angelo's reaction. The letter that was sent back to the Gonzalez's here in the valley after all of this took place. The young man, the exchange student, says, I came back from San Diego, from Tokyo. After three days of my return to Japan, I left my house for the northern island, Hokkaido. August 20th, I went to the Japanese family. I handed the Japanese flag to the family, the house of Mr. Kawasaki. When I went there, the mother and the brother and the sister of the former Japanese soldier were there. They were very much glad to see the flag again. When they see the flag, they cried with tears. They could not imagine that they would be able to see the flag. They really appreciate that you have been taking care of our Japanese flag for a long time. They said to me it was a miracle. The soldier left his house for China when he was 21 years old, 1941. The mother said if the son had come back again, he would be 80 years old. At that day, I called you from their house. You weren't home, he continues to write there. And speaking of the family, the Kawasakis, he says, as they cannot write and speak, they asked me to say hello to your family. They really appreciate you, and I also, as a Japanese, appreciate from my heart. Thank you very much. You got this letter, well, it was dated September 8th, 1976, so it's been 32 years almost since you got that letter. Just hearing it again right now, what does that mean to you, to hear what it meant to that family in Japan?
Well, just to hear what it meant to them, and I read this letter, and it kind of motivated me to, and made me happy to hear that they enjoyed it. I took care of it, and I'm very happy to know that his mother had made a shrine for him, put a bunch of flowers, put the flag over his head and his picture and the shrine, and they sent me the picture, and I think it was something that I would have never thought of doing, but I did it, and it's very emotional, and I do appreciate what they did.
Now, you had this flag at your house for 30 years before this exchange student came up. Did you ever think that something like that might be possible, that somehow you could get it back to his family, or you really didn't have any idea what it all meant?
Right? I had no idea at all what the flag meant or what it was all about. It was just a big coincidence. This Japanese student had come by, and I took it out, and he read it, and he told me that means a lot to his family.
And what an absolutely amazing story.
He suggested it to take it back to Japan and run it and to find a family. That's what he did, and I think he did a very good job, and I appreciate. And, of course, I feel bad because I didn't answer him back, and we haven't been in communication with him. So I don't know exactly what is happening.
Maybe we can take care of that. Maybe we can track him down and put you two back in touch another 30 years later. It strikes me that maybe, and obviously you didn't know what that flag meant for so long, and you weren't thinking about it every day. You had a life to live. You had kids to raise.
Right.
It strikes me, though, that maybe the reason that you did what you did is that had the situation been reversed, had that Japanese soldier killed you and found something on you, that you would have wanted your family to have that. Is that something that entered your mind? Is that part of why you did it?
It never entered my mind as far as me having anything, because I really didn't carry anything. We were instructed not to carry any information. Not at all. So, lucky if you even had smoke. But anyway, it never occurred to me for me to produce something for somebody else to come up with like I did. So I don't know.
Well, it's clear that Japanese family is very thankful as well. They should be. And hats off to you for holding on to it for that long and knowing what to do when the situation presented itself. Just a beautiful story. We have about 6 minutes left or so in the program today. And one thing that I like to ask veterans when they're on this program, I call the program Hometown Heroes, because even though surviving veterans of World War II, almost to a man, will tell you they're not heroes, that the real heroes are the ones who didn't come home, the 400,000 Americans who were killed in our service during World War II. To me, and hopefully to the rest of those in my generation, you are heroes for putting us and the future of America ahead of yourselves. But I know that as you served in the war, a lot of you had guys that you looked up to, that you admired, that in your minds really were your heroes. Is there someone like that in your life that you'd like to share with us about this afternoon?
Oh, yeah. I have a real close buddy of mine that we went through, I would say, hell in the front lines. He was my BAR man.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives here in town. His name is Calvin Goss.
Have you stayed in touch with him for 60 plus years?
Yes.
Wow.
In fact, I just saw him a couple of weeks ago, and we keep in touch. And in fact, we look each other like brothers.
Well, I bet.
Yeah, we were really, really close. Yeah. And we stuck together from induction date till we got discharged, all the way through. His name being G-O-S and mine G-O-N. It was pretty close on alphabetically. And that's how they went, this alphabetically.
That's right.
So, therefore, when they said Gonzalez, Calvin Goss, come on in. So, like I say, he was a very close friend of mine.
What was it about him and the way he handled himself that made him one of your heroes?
Well, he was one of my heroes. He saved my life several times. He saved my life, and I saved his life. And he can tell you that.
You with your M1 and him with his Browning automatic rifle?
Browning automatic rifle.
Getting guys that would have gotten you otherwise?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he stood right in front of us and fire away, because those BAR, it's a heavy machine. It's like a machine gun.
Right.
But it's smaller. But he took care of it, and him and I also got together, and we climbed a mountain, a peak, where this cannon was giving us a rough time shooting at us. We could not do anything without, not even a move, because it would shoot us.
They had you pinned down.
Right.
This is Okinawa?
In Okinawa.
Uh-huh.
So it says, Calvin, let's get some gas. So we got about a gallon of gas from the pool back there, and we creaked
up. Good luck getting one these days.
Yeah, I know.
$5 a gallon. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
And we climbed the peak, went over the peak where the cave was. We threw this gallon of gasoline and ignited with a torch and threw it in the cave. And there we got the crew out of our way.
Homemade flamethrower.
Homemade low flamethrower, yeah.
Yeah, do it yourself.
He used to smoke. And he had a little piece of paper, lit it up, and threw it in there, Andy. So we threw it in.
So it sounds like that didn't just get you guys through. You paved the way for a lot of guys to get through.
Yes.
That probably saved some lives by
doing
that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. No, we got rid of that gun fast.
Well, if the Army needs any suggestions today, maybe Calvin can share some of his improvisational secrets with them there. Let me ask you this, Angelo. I haven't talked about this yet today. As a Latino soldier at the time, right, were there a lot of other Hispanic young men that were in your unit? Did you find yourself a minority? Did that mean anything at all to you? And were you treated the same as everyone else?
We were treated the same as everybody else. And like you say, there was quite a few Latinos. Yeah, quite a few.
And a lot of them from right here in the Central Valley, I imagine.
From around the Central Valley, from Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, quite a few Latinos all over. And a lot of good buddies from Texas, a lot of them from Arizona, New Mexico, got killed right alongside that I knew. And
do you think that's something that's understood by today's generations, what you and people like you did during World War II? Do you think people understand what it was all about and why you did what you did?
Well, I don't know. Everybody has a different opinion, but they should consider that it was something big going on, and there's something that they don't consider big.
Well, we all wouldn't be here if it wasn't for what you and what people like you did, and you never would have met your wife of 56 years, never would have had 4 kids and 6 grandkids, so
right.
There's 10 people right here who wouldn't be here
right.
If you didn't come home.
That's right.
Looking back at all of that, what was the greatest significance for you when you came home from the war? And I'm sure you were relieved when you heard that the war was over, because otherwise you would have been doing the same kind of fighting on mainland Japan that you did in Leyte and Okinawa.
That's correct.
When you came back home to the States, did you feel like you had a different perspective? Did you have maybe a new focus in life? Did you think there was going to be another war like that? What was going through your mind? And maybe what were you most proud of what you guys had done?
Well, you know, right after that, the Korean War came up. And since then, we've had a few other wars come up. But it's nothing like our war. But no, I did think of I got called a couple of times to rejoin. You know how the Army is.
Oh yeah.
Each of these letters, and it's time to rejoin and get a better education, get a better this, better that. But I said no. I had other obligations to take care of, and I never did join again. So I could pull another term if I wanted it.
Well, I think you did more than enough, and I thank you for it. We're out of time on this program today, but Angelo, thank you so much for your service to our country and for being here today and for your service to that Japanese family who very much appreciated the flag all those years later. We'll be back with another program next Sunday. Thanks for listening today to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
I always wanted to be a fireman when I grew up.
A pilot.
A teacher.
For me, it was an engineer.
Over the years, my dream didn't change.
But the rising cost of college was a big reality check.
I was determined to make it on my own, to find a way that I could pay for college.
That's why I joined the National Guard.
The Guard gives me money for college.
So I can go to school full-time and fly part-time.
My unit helps out after a natural disaster hit.
Like after a tornado.
Flood.
Blizzard.
So I get to help people, just like I always wanted.
And around here, that's almost every June.
Monday through Friday, my job might be in finance, but when a wildfire breaks out, I get called up to help control it. There's no bigger rush than being a firefighter in the Guard.
Then flying a Black Hawk.
Then leading my squad.
Then rebuilding my hometown.
The National Guard put me in charge of my future.
Thanks to the Guard, I'm becoming who I always wanted to be.
You can reach your education and career goals faster in the National Guard. Visit 1-800-GO-GUARD.com or call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask us how much you'll receive towards your college expenses.
Sponsored by the California National Guard, aired by the California Broadcasters Association and this station.
I died last week, shot 3 times in the back. I guess you could argue I had it coming, but my mama, she didn't deserve none of this. I watched her that day, at my grave. I never meant to cause that kind of pain. Yeah, I was in a gang, bad gang. Thought I was untouchable. I was just playing the fool. But my mama and my little brother, they the ones that gotta pay the price. They're the ones that gotta deal with it all. You think my gang kids? I'm gone now. Hell nah. They just gonna pull in the next stupid fool and wipe up the streets with his sorry self. Goodbye, Mama. I wish I could tell you I'm sorry.
If you see gang activity or know of gang members, call the police. Together, we can save our kids. Call toll-free 1-888-498-STOP, 1-888-498-STOP, or valleycrimestoppers.org.
Never thought much about what harm used motor oil can cause if it's not recycled properly? Well, consider these scary facts. 1 gallon of used oil can pollute 1 million gallons of drinking water. That's a one-year supply for 50 people. 90% of used oil filters are not recycled. If they were, recycling 1 ton of used oil filters would recover 1,700 pounds of steel and up to 60 gallons of used oil. The City of Fresno reminds you to be part of the solution. Recycle your used motor oil and filters properly. For more information, call 621-1111. This message funded by a grant from the California Integrated Waste Management Board. Zero waste. You make it happen.
This is the 50,000-watt information, weather, and traffic leader. Broadcasting's News Talk 580. KMJ Fresno.
The news starts now.